Today's reflection is scraps of stories woven around the gospel narrative, a collage of sorts to make sense of this story. Notice what takes your attention. Richard Rohr recounts something that arrested him near his home. He says, "There is a sidewalk where the homeless often sit against the wall to catch the morning sun. A few days ago, I saw new graffiti chalked clearly on the pavement. It touched me so profoundly that I immediately went home and wrote it in my journal. It said, 'I watch how foolishly man guards his nothing, thereby keeping us out. Truly, God is hated here.'" And he goes on, "I can only guess at what kind of person wrote such wisdom. But I heard a paraphrase of Jesus in mind. The people of the sidewalk might well be at the centre, and the people in their houses might well be on the circumference. Now, I can probably assume that this street person was not formally educated in theology or trained in contemplative spirituality. Yet, from the edges, this person recognised the false nature of our self-image, and yet the clear sense of being concluded and excluded. This street person has both edges and essence, and also knows exactly who God is." Now that's an angle on the gospel. "I watch how foolishly man or woman guards his or her nothing, thereby keeping us out. Truly, God is hated here." And I hear Jesus' words reminding me that I simply don't know when I will encounter the face of Christ next, but most probably on the edges, thus making nearly all ground holy ground. And in the end, maybe that is precisely what Jesus' words are meant to do. The gospel speaks of a final judgment where goats and sheep are separated from one another. I know this, and yet I find it most helpful to hear this as encouragement, even now, to see and experience and respond to this world in new ways. Israeli filmmaker Hagar Morag tells a stark personal story which speaks into our hurting world today, not only in Gaza, but here too. And again, powerfully highlights Jesus' words for me. She says, "When my grandmother arrived here in Israel after the Holocaust, the Jewish agency promised her a house. She had nothing. Her entire family was exterminated. She waited for a long time in a tent, in an extremely precarious situation. They then took her to Ajami in Jaffa, to a beautiful beach house. She saw that on the table there were still the dishes of the Arabs who lived there and who had been kicked out. So she went back to the agency and said, 'Take me back to my tent. I will never do to anyone else what was done to me.' And that goes on, 'This is my legacy. But not everyone made that choice. How could we have become what we opposed? That's the big question. Have we become what we opposed? Today's parable was the inspiration for one of Tolstoy's most popular stories, where love is, God is. An old man called Martin labours away repairing shoes in a basement shop. Through his window, he can see the legs of everyone passing by. He can tell who it is by their shoes, most of which he has repaired at some time or other. The death of his wife and child has left him a bitter man. But when his best friend gives him a New Testament, the old man undergoes a change of heart. One night, Martin has a dream in which the Lord appears to him and tells him that the next day he will come by. And so all day he keeps looking expectantly out the window when he hears someone approaching. All he sees, however, are the usual passers-by, plus a sidewalk sweeper suffering from the cold weather, an old woman berating a boy for stealing her apple, and a thinly clad young mother with a hungry child. Martin helps each one of them. But that night, he was disappointed that the Lord did not show up. Then, of course, comes the revelation, and Martin discovers the meaning of the words in today's parable. As you did it to the least of my brothers and sisters, you did it to me. In a piece entitled Christ Among the Scraps, Jan Richardson weaves a striking narrative of creating a collage from discarded scraps as she reflected on today's gospel reading. She says, "I played with the painted pieces, picking up and setting aside. I chose scraps that I had tried to use in earlier collages. I chose pieces from which I had previously cut scraps and shapes. I chose paper that I experimented with as I tried different colours or marking techniques. I chose from the leavings, the left behind. I dug my hands deep into the pile, hitting the bottom on the stack, turning over the layers that hadn't seen the light of day for months, sorting, sifting, choosing." I thought about this passage, she continues, in which Jesus speaks of sorting and of sifting, how he describes the day when he will confront us with the choosing we have done, what we embraced and what we rejected, what we failed even to notice. He speaks of those who recognize him and minister to him, and those who don't. This text from Matthew lies at the deepest core of our call as followers of Christ, and it is perhaps the one that most fiercely challenges us, that stretches us the farthest. When was it that we saw you? I turned the scraps over in my hands, she says, sorting, choosing, finding the pattern. I think of how my deepest regrets, what few I allow myself, are most often attached to occasions when I didn't see, didn't know how to see, didn't have the eyes for seeing. The realization of it, the dawning knowledge of where my vision is lacking, is itself a kind of punishment, but an invitation too, to learn to look more closely, to take in what I have rushed past. When was it that we saw you? A face begins to take shape from the scraps. I look into these eyes and wonder what package they offer. One eye, the crimson, was left over from the collage that I did for my reflection on John 9:1-41 during Lent, says Richardson. Jesus spat on the ground, John tells us, and made mud and placed it on a man's unseen eyes. He told the man to go wash in the pool of Siloam, whose name means scent. The scent man saw, and he recognized the one who sent him. Jesus tells him that he has come so that those who do not see may see. When was it that we saw you? She resumes, I begin to glue the pieces that I have chosen from the scraps. And I find myself thinking of a talk I recently heard in which the speaker seemed to think that evangelism is something that involves our taking Jesus to places he hasn't already been. And I pray for eyes to see the ways that Christ already inhabits every place. How there is no place it has already occurred to him to visit, no space in which he is already working to make a home, no person through whom he might not startle them with the blazing of his presence. When was it that we saw you? By his words in Matthew 25, Jesus assures us that our greatest sin lies not in having the wrong theology or refusing to believe as others would have us believe, or failing to take him to a place he has never gone. Our sin lies in neglecting to recognize and respond to him where he already is. Jesus gets awfully specific in telling us where we can find him. Each of the habitations he lists here is marked by lack. Lack of food, lack of water, lack of hospitality, lack of clothing, lack of health, lack of freedom. Christ chooses these places, inhabits these spaces, waits for us to show up, waits too for us to recognize those places in ourselves. He knows that we haven't recognized the poverty within our own souls and how he dwells there. It's hard to see him and serve him in others without being patronized. When was it that we saw you? As Sarah said, this weekend is the last in ordinary time. Christ the King, or the reign of Christ, the liturgical calendar tells us. As we prepare to cross the threshold into Advent, the time of preparation for Christmas, I wonder what Christ, this sovereign who came in such a ragged, radical guise, had in store for the season to come. How he'll show up. Where he'll invite me to see him. Richardson says, I gaze at the unexpected face that gazes back at me. Christ among the scraps, I'll call it. making his comments. When was it that we saw you? That's question enough for this week.